Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my interview today is with Bobby Mata. He's a Toronto magician. He's a mentalist. He's an entertainer. He's a businessman. He's a guy who used to sell cars and or at least was connected to that industry. And he's going to talk a little bit about that on the podcast today. But he talks mostly about how he's taken all these different skills and he's brought them together in a really integrated way, how he's indwelt these things to make a difference in his world with respect to the business that he's building that's turning out to be a huge success, that he's now a company called Trick Theater that he's now taking into the U.S. as well. So he's going to talk a lot about the actual specifics of his performing, but he's going to talk about interpersonal skills and how things like that and have applied to not only his business sense, but also to how he performs on stage. I think you're going to really enjoy it. Bobby's one of the nicest guys in show business. He really is. You're gonna love him. You got to go see his show. It's up at Dave & Buster's in Vaughan. Check him out online. You're going to hear more about that, but bobbymata.com. And don't forget to check out my site, davidpecklive.com, for more info about my public speaking, my book, Real Change is Incremental. And of course, we're nearing 200 podcasts online, so check those out as well. Bobby Mata, coming soon to a theater near you. Well, welcome to Face to Face, and I don't think I could be at a more appropriate place for this interview, but we're at the Browser's Den of Magic here, and our guest today is Bobby Mata.
Hey.
Bobby, is it Bob? Can I call you?
You can call me whatever you want. I don't care, but I changed it from Bob to Bobby when I hit 30. So
when you hit 30, nice. That's sort of the other way, isn't it? No, don't you get more formal as you get older?
I don't know. I thought I was feeling the age hit, so I thought maybe I should twist it up. You know, we're in the industry. Yes. Industry folk do
Perhaps
things backwards.
I should ask people to start calling me Davey.
Davey boy.
Davey boy. There's a real elegance to that, I think.
I think so, too.
There is actually two people. There was when I was in the trade as an electrician, a guy called me, an Irish guy, Sam Watt, called me Davey.
Yeah.
And Dave Murray, who we both know,
right,
calls me Davey still to
this
day.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, still to this day. And they're the two people, I think the only two people I would let get away with that.
Yeah, yeah. I think the universe fixes it quickly, though. As soon as I changed it from Bob to Bobby, I started losing hair. So
interesting.
The balance was there.
Something's going on there. Yes, a disturbance in the force.
Yeah.
So what the hell are you? Are you a magician? Are you a mentalist? Are you an entertainer? A combination of the three?
I think at the end of the day, we're all entertainers under that umbrella, but I was all of those things, and I had to go through a learning curve to figure out who the heck I am, really. Because at first, it was just magic, just like all of us. You know, it was card tricks. And I came into the game quite late. I came in at the age of 30, and I'm 40, 44 now, so it's only been like 14 years. So I remember it was my first year anniversary. We were in Vegas. I walked into a magic shop, and I spent about 6 hours in that magic shop.
Wow.
Blew all my money.
Your anniversary?
My first year anniversary, wedding anniversary.
Okay.
And I walked out of there with every single nook and cranny of magic you can think of. And that was it. It was obsessive, compulsive, every single second of every day for a long time.
So thereafter. Is that really where the pebble was dropped in the pond for you? Like, yes. Was there nothing before that?
Yes, there was, but it was the same thing that everyone else experienced. Maybe a little bit more deeper for me, because my uncle was, he wasn't a magician, but he was a hobbyist, and when I was around 4 or 5, he showed me a couple of tricks. The first trick I ever saw was, did I ever tell you the story with the chiclet?
I don't think so, no.
It's hilarious. Okay, so he had a false tooth that he was able to pull back with his tongue. So he would take a white chiclet,
yeah.
He would palm it,
yeah.
He would pull his tooth back and show the chiclet,
oh.
Take it out.
Oh, come on.
And I would think that's his tooth. He would put it in his pocket, snap his finger, open his mouth, and his tooth was back.
Okay, that's ridiculous.
So,
and how old were you when you saw this?
4.
So you're not going to believe me, but last night I was talking to somebody about how I got pulled into magic.
Yeah.
And it's never one thing, right? As we both know, it's relationships, it's people that you meet. But there was a guy, Gord King, Uncle Gord, mm-hmm. not related, but mm-hmm. I called him Uncle Gord, not a magician.
Yeah.
But I'm getting a shiver, Bobby. I can see the painting on his wall, and he would reach into the waves that this sailboat was, and he would pull a dime out of the waves.
Wow.
I'm getting shivers, man.
Yeah.
And I'm convinced that was the seed, that wonder, you know, at the risk of sounding corny, that wonderful seed that was planted. And then, of course, there was a few other things that happened later in life. But we would go over, and he was a bit of a clown.
Right.
Always a real comedian.
Same, you know, with my goofing uncle. Around. Same thing.
Sounds very similar.
Familiar, yeah.
So you were, what, four
so
or five,
four or
six?
Five, and every time we'd have, like, a little family function,
what a great trick.
Yeah, he would do that. And he also did the other stuff, you know, making the hanky disappear.
So he was kind of into magic a little bit.
Yeah, he was a hobbyist, and he had the, you know, the all the little coin stuff and just the gimmicks. And I remember back then, I didn't care so much for the magic. It bothered me to the point where I had to know.
Mm.
So I wouldn't leave him alone. And I said, you know, you need to show me. And when he showed me, it didn't kill it for me like most people would, you know, if they see a method, they're like, ah, that's how it's done. Okay, so move on to the next
thing.
You pass me the milk and cookies. For me, it was more like, oh, that is amazing. I want to do it everywhere I go.
See, that's kind of cool to me that it's kind of the I suppose the paradox of the method for the magician, mm-hmm. because magicians do seem to want to solve problems.
Right.
On some level. Oh, here I want to float. Now,
right.
How do I figure out how to float?
So it's
a problem to be solved. But for you, it sounds to me like the method actually drove you further into the
further
wonder,
into
which
it.
Is kind of paradoxical
yeah,
in a
it
way,
is. It
right?
is, because you don't hear that all the time, right?
No,
for me, it was amazing. And I think maybe that adds to the creative side of what I do, because of my product line and everything. So I create a lot of my own magic. I create a lot of magic that I sell to the magic community as well. And I think that maybe had to do something with the fact that I love the theory behind it. I love the principles behind it. I love the way the thinking goes into how to solve that problem, you know. And I love that. It just makes, you know, it makes me drool. And I go to bed oftentimes, you know, when I'm having a hard time falling asleep, and I try to solve problems with magic, you know, like, here's the illusion that needs to be created. How do you do that? And I start running through what I can do. And I also always have a notepad next to my bed, because mm-hmm. sometimes it hits, right?
Yeah,
and
of
you're
course.
Like, ooh, yeah. There's a solution to that.
I tell everyone, my students, write everything down.
Everything.
Magic, whatever. Thought, poem, mm-hmm. line, chapter title.
Whatever
you never
it
know
is.
What it's going to lead to.
Bits
right?
of business, gags,
yeah.
jokes.
Yeah.
Everything.
The notebooks.
Yeah.
There should be a series of them in your library, on a shelf at home, collecting dust right now from the last 10, 12, 15 years of your life. Seriously, it sounds crazy, but I
have
think
about 750 post-it notes too that I have to dig
right.
through that
yes.
make no
is
sense
that
at all.
Wallpaper? No, actually, no. Sadly, it's just
that's my show.
Well, you know what? That's storyboarding.
Yeah.
Right. That's how films are made.
Right.
Right. I read a great book on writing screenplays just recently, just sort of opening up a new world for
right.
me. And this writer says you need 40 cue cards.
Mm-hmm.
That's your film.
Mm.
And
wow.
each cue card gets a couple of minutes. And
right.
that's your scene.
Right.
And another scene. And then you worry about the segue and what's the crosscut
right.
and what's
right.
the fade. And what's
right.
you know. And it's actually a really smart way to build a show
sure.
as well. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fascinated by your Vegas trip and your anniversary. Sounds delightful.
Mm-hmm.
What was it? Okay, so you took away a lot of stuff by the sounds of it.
I got the props and everything.
And
I came back.
And but what was it that grabbed you? What?
So I'll tell you. This is what happened. At that time, I was going through a rough period in my life, and I had a car dealership. I had a subprime lease company turned car dealership. In essence, I was leasing cars to people with bad credit, and it turned into a car lot after doing all the repos.
I think you may have leased me a car.
Maybe I did. So, and And that business is so cutthroat, and I'm just not that guy, and it broke me down. So I liquidated the portfolio, and I was in heavy depression at that time. Mm. So I took a year off and did nothing.
Because it had failed, or because of your...
It was just my mental state and the business alone. I was young, you know, I was under 20, I was just about 20, right. Under 30, just, you know, reaching my end. And I hadn't, reached that goal in my life that I wanted to, and the business was really hard on me. There was just dealing with people with low credit and having to repossess cars. Mm. And, you know, it's a grungy business. You know,
I would
think
so.
Dealing with used car dealers and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It wore on me. I wasn't tough skin enough for it. So I stopped it, and that's when I got involved in the magic. And that was my outlet. So that was, for me, I was like, okay, this is my drug. This is numbing the pain. This is my outlet. This has been fantastic. So I literally just engulfed myself, maybe in slightly an unhealthy way, because I think if you're a magician, you have to be somewhat OCD. So
to some degree, I think that's what happened.
You know, and I stayed home.
Or
my
maybe
wife,
performer, maybe even, right?
Right.
Of some kind.
So my wife went out, worked. We had a small apartment, a dog, and I just practiced magic all day. I watched the Illusionist videos, Brad Christian's videos. I read all the books. I had a library of books, and literally just, you know, got really good at doing my close-up work. And my wife said, you know what, just go out there and do a gig. It doesn't hurt. You might like it. And because I was doing magic for everyone anyway, so
right.
Went out, did my first gig, and it was horrible. Went out, did my second gig. It got better. And then eventually I was working restaurants like everybody else, and that was, you know, that happened for a few years. I put out my first effect that was a called Voodoo Dust with browsers with Jeff, and that was a year into magic.
Wow, you were 1 year into magic and you were already creating stuff.
I created my first trick and it sold well. Yeah, so Murphy's picked it up and we started selling them and I made
Murphy's
money.
Being a big magic distributor
Huge,
in the States. Yeah,
big magic distributor in the States. And that did well, and it was great, you know. And then I went on from close up to doing a parlor show. I did my first stand up show for a small group at a function, and I realized there's more money in this. So I started doing stand up, more like comedy magic, and it didn't do so bad. And then I decided I want to be an illusionist. So I'm giving you the fast paced story.
Yeah, no, it's good.
And then I started getting the big box illusions, and I had trucks hauling around. I did a seven dove. Dove act.
Well, I had no idea. Wow.
I had a huge dove act. I had a huge bird coop in the basement. And then I produced a dead dove at a show because there's only so much time you have. CEO of Bank of Montreal was there talking, went for an extended 15 minutes. Doves are having a hard time breathing. My last dove didn't make it. And that was it for me.
That's like, going to be the title of your autobiography, by the way. My last dove didn't make it.
Didn't make it. Oh, I love that. Yeah. I got to write that one down. My last dove didn't make it.
I'll write it down here, but we've got it
that
now recorded.
That is so good. So,
So the next show, you were protested. Animal rights activists were there.
That's it. That's it. Actually, I played it off pretty good. It worked out well. But then I stopped doing that, and I realized I was getting praise for all the routines that had dialogue and interaction.
Mm,
and those routines are, you know, more of a mentalism style, you know, routines. And I started noticing that those are the routines that people are reacting well from. I'm able to be myself and more comfortable. You know, I can actually pack one case, go do this exact same show, get paid the same amount of money, if not even more, have a better act that suits my style. So that's when I switched over about 7 years ago to being, I think it's about 6 years now. Mentalist. So I branded myself as a mentalist.
So do you think you brought some skills to the table as a sales guy, as a guy that actually had to sort of slog it through the dirt, if you will, repossessing cars and so on? Was there any skills there that, you know, you brought to the performance, 100, you know, to the stage?
50%.
Maybe not to the stage, but maybe to the phone when you're booking the show.
Interpersonal skills.
Yeah.
No, I think more so. It all played together. I always say that, you know, most magicians are artists, and artists don't have a real business sense. So they're quirky characters. They don't know how to close a deal for the life of them. So I think that was a real big part for me, is I had a real keen insight on business. I was doing car sales, and I had my own business, and I was able to close deals really good too. So that was an amazing factor in making things work for me. So put those together, mesh those together, and it worked out well.
So funny, you know, that you say interpersonal skills. A lot of the acts I know, and I'm not just pointing fingers at magicians, but I'm talking variety acts as well as musicians, don't tend to excel
right
at interpersonal skills.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
There's this sense of the loner or the nerd.
Right.
Or the comic book collector type of guy who
introvert,
sits in the corner, introverted.
Weirdo. They're not,
yeah. And I mean, I think I can say that because I kind of fell into that category myself to a large degree. And I go back to, you know, what you said about sort of why you got pulled into magic. It was your drug. It was your outlet.
Right.
And I think for those introverted folk, those loners in the room, I'm not sure it's the drug or the outlet, but it's a way of, I don't know, a way, can I say this? It's a way of masking the pain.
Sure. No, but it
you
is.
You know what I mean? As 100%. Crazy as that sounds,
100%.
I think there's some truth to that. I
absolutely.
Think.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And it's interesting that you say that because, I mean, I don't have a lot of friends in the industry. When I have someone that's a friend of mine like you, I can have a normal conversation with you.
Right.
And it's so comforting that there is a few in the industry that you can actually look at and talk to like a normal human being, right? And so the few that I have are good friends of mine too.
So clearly though, okay, and we don't have to go down this road because sometimes, you know, some of the people I interview don't want to talk about families and so on. You know, you've talked about your wife at least once, maybe twice. You know, she pushed you, and I talk about Elizabeth all the time. So she clearly was a huge support mechanism for you. And
monster.
So this idea of going out to do the work while you're home, hang on, let me get this straight. You want to do more card tricks? And you're what? Oh, right, and you're not making any money.
Right.
Oh, good for you.
No, my wife is, she's...
And so then she's the one that gets you out on the street doing your first show.
She's always been that.
Like yeah.
That. Yeah. If anyone was to meet Alana, my wife, they would first thing, you know, once if you get to see her, which she's very transparent. You'll know exactly what kind of character she is in the first 10 minutes. And as nice. soon as you get to meet her, the first thing everyone always says, they turn around and they say, "You are lucky. You are really lucky. That is amazing."
Yeah.
That is one amazing.
Do you know what a friend says to me? Yeah, David, you married out of your league.
Way. Yeah, I get the same thing too.
That's cool. But I think it's a really important insight in the whole. I mean, I think it's an important, and I want to talk a little bit about business and entrepreneurship and where you're heading now with Trick Theater, your new company, which is crazy from what little I know. And we can talk Dave and Buster's and so on and how you've taken this, you know, working for yourself in your basement, basically, for your wife and your dog, into what's turning into this little empire.
Mini empire, yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's blowing
but,
up.
But I think it speaks to the... I think it speaks to the... The support mechanism, right? Or
right.
Support mechanisms that you need in place to do anything well.
Right.
Right, your family. We're talking about infrastructure. Relational infrastructure.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I agree. And I think you know, for anyone, there's a learning curve, and there is ups and downs, and there is trial and error. But as long as you know the support is there, as long as the vision is there, and as long as there is drive, you know. Not only that, but there's passion. You know, this is our passion, and we're so lucky that we found our passion and are able to make a career out of it.
And now she is the business,
time.
Right? She's
she
with
is.
You 100%. She's not on stage,
yeah.
But right?
She keeps it ticking. She's the one.
Yeah. So she's the. Yeah. Is she the brains behind the operation? Is that what you're saying?
Are we still recording?
We're filming.
Yeah, she is. Of course she is. And the thing is, like, she has a background in accounting. She's
right.
Really wow. good with numbers.
So we got sales guy. We got accountant.
And she's very strategic, and she's very organized, and she has a calendar. All her timelines are being met very carefully. If something's not met, she shifts it accordingly, and she's very, very, very strategic, and she works very hard. One of the hardest working people I've ever met in my life, if not the most, right? And with, you know, with my creativity and with her hard work and ethics, we're a pretty powerful team.
Yeah, you sound like a great team.
Yeah, we're a powerful team.
Yeah, and it sounds like out. You know what? And again, we're going to go at the risk of sounding corny. It does, you know. There's some similarities here between your relationship and mine and Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. There there's a genuine belief in what you do.
Right. Yes.
This isn't just, oh, geez, I'm going to, all right.
Here we go again.
Here we go again. Yeah. And I'll support the guy because I love him.
Yeah.
But no, there's a genuine belief and passion there.
Oh, yeah. Alana's amazing. And when she sees something start to stick, she gets excited and she gets emotional. And she's like, you know, this is amazing. And she's right behind it.
150%. And is she a good critic, too?
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's a very good critic. You know, she wants things to work. So if she thinks that there's something out of line, she's the first one.
And
to
don't you need that as the guy on stage, forget about the business for a second. You're the guy on stage. You need somebody that you trust who's going to say to you, you know what, Bobby, I don't think that's not really you.
Yes.
Or that's not working. Or maybe you should think about that, right?
And if it wasn't like that, then I wouldn't be going to her. And I'm always going to her first. You know,
yeah,
she's the first person I go to and say, take a look at this for me and tell me what you think. And she stops and she listens, you know.
Yeah,
and
that's, listening's huge, it seems to me.
Yeah, it's huge. And I see her listening and I see her processing it. And she gives me honest feedback. And she's so good at it, too. So
I think there's a huge insight, you know. To have somebody critique your act or who you are or to comment, I think it has to presuppose a pretty intimate, deep relationship.
Yeah. Oh,
has,
yeah, for sure.
If you got a director, don't actors always, the DiCaprios of the world, don't they talk about trusting their directors?
Sure, yeah, of course.
Right?
Of course.
You got to have that trust. Yep. You got to have that relationship.
That net's got to be there.
Otherwise, it's water off a duck's back, yeah. Right? Because you're going to question where the critique is coming from in the first place.
Sure.
Right? So how do the two of you as entrepreneurs then go from Dave and Buster's, and you can talk about what that means. Most of us, I guess, know, probably out there in the listening podcasting world know what that is. But you're now doing weekly shows, and now you're almost franchising this under a company called Trick Theater. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it could be bigger than the Microchip. So do tell.
So it started off, and I'll try to go as quick as I can.
Because I want to hear about the entrepreneurial side of this.
Sure,
it's
sure.
Fascinating.
Yep, so right when I started doing this whole magic thing 14 years ago, into my first year, I developed a relationship with Dave & Buster's, and they have this amazing space that seats about 200 people, and I did my first show there. Yeah, are we switching? Yeah?
No, no go.
Okay.
No go.
I did my first show there, and that's when my relationship started with them, and I would do one-offs here and there with them, and going back about 5 years ago, I started doing regular shows once every Friday, and it was very difficult to, you know, figure out what the sweet spot is, the demographic in Toronto and in Vaughan, and
this is outside of the heart of the city, right?
Right, right.
You wouldn't expect a magic show
to do well or anything.
Yeah.
And how do you market something
exactly.
that? It's so different than Vegas and Broadway.
And you're not in the theater district. You're
totally different.
Yeah, you're in the suburbs.
We had the luxury of having, you know, Dave & Buster's be there and support us, but what do you do with it? So I was a corporate guy for so many years, and I had some corporate clients, so I would have a list at least, so I would invite people. And in any event, we started doing the Friday shows, and they were very slow. So the first year of doing the Friday shows, I didn't make any money. Second year, we started figuring out different marketing techniques. How to do this, what to do, what tricks that we can, wheel in to make this happen. And we started to make some money. We started to break even and go in the green. Third year, we started slipping in some other stuff, and we really went, you know, we went right to the wall and lit the fire hard. And I'm talking like we worked morning, noon, night, every day, read books, called people. We tried everything. We spent money. We got marketing companies, advertising companies, different agencies. We did everything we could, and it finally like hit the sweet spot. We made a deal with Dave & Buster's with their game cards. They gave us those game cards and the luxury of selling at their front door, so we had their walk-ins. Now people are buying the tickets from the walk-ins, and we're doing the Groupon deals, and we started selling the show out.
Wow.
And this was Friday nights. So we decided the shows were getting so busy, we need to do two shows. So we started doing two shows every Friday. And then Saturday became available to us because Dave Curran was there and he's no longer there. So Saturday became available to us. And then we started doing two shows on Saturday, two shows on Friday. And every single show was selling out throughout the winter months. And that we were only doing this throughout the winter months. And then we decided, let's go through the entire year. And this has been like 5 years now, four shows a weekend, and we're doing fairly well.
So, you know, you said you kind of hit the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. You know, was it really about trial and error?
Was it
more social media versus print ads?
It was everything.
It was a bit of everything.
Yeah. Everything. And it's longevity. This is not, you know, we needed time to figure out how to do this. And we finally figured out how many people we can seat in there. We need to have different type of menus. Where to market, how to market, Google, what advertising agencies to use, what kind of marketing techniques are required. Because it's so different. The marketing for this type of theater is so different. And then we realized that, the most important thing is the show has to be amazing.
Show's got to be good still, right?
And no being question. There yeah. for 5 years doing shows so many times a week, the show just got better and better yeah. and better. And now it's like it's a show that everyone that comes to see it is guaranteed that they'll be back at least within a month or two with guests, if not the next week. So every weekend when I'm there, tonight I'm doing two shows there, and we have, I think, about... close to about 75 people coming back to see the show.
Wow.
And they've ordered
online.
Do you keep
stats on all that stuff?
Alana does.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and she amazing. Always lets me know. It's like, by the way, we have this many reservations, and this many of them are repeats.
And is that because this is all now, is it app-driven? Like, are you...
It's everything driven. We have apps. We have a system that we're doing with ballots. So everyone fills out a ballot at the end of the show, and they get a free ticket on their birthday. So we have all these little tricks that we've used, and those ballots have been
so
amazing.
Somebody, so. I love this line. You know, the only thing more expensive than hiring a professional is hiring an amateur. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you
got to
do it over and over.
Over and over again.
So did you guys step outside of your own frame of reference often to get that kind of insight?
Yeah. I think if you don't, you're never going to learn. It doesn't work. So you have to. You have to. And we did that all the time. We still do it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think now that we're in a real sweet spot, Dave & Buster's realized, wow, this is working. People are coming back. They're loving it. They're seeing their, you know, rise in their revenue. The numbers are up. Toronto, out of the 150 stores that Dave & Buster's has across the states, Toronto is, I think, top three for the past five years.
Okay.
What does that tell you?
Yeah, exactly.
There's something going on.
Something going on there.
So the regional manager noticed that, took it to head office, and they're like, there's something's to be said about this entertainment side of things. Dave & Buster's, they have video games, they have pool tables, they have a restaurant, you can watch fights and drink. They don't have live entertainment, but they have the space for it.
Yeah.
They don't do anything with it. They just use it for corporate functions. So they came to me and they said, do you want to help us with this? And I said, no, I'll just do it. I'll replicate this model and I'll go and do it at all the
stores. What I love about it is, you know, I want to get back to the, are you a magician? Are you a mentalist?
Yeah.
In a second here. Talk more about the entertainment. But what I love about the business side is it wasn't like you were driving by Dave & Buster's and mm-hmm. said, geez, we gotta turn this into an entertainment empire.
Right.
This developed.
Passion.
This was very
started with
this
the
evolved,
magic.
Right? It started with the magic.
And I just want a stage so I can do my show.
Yeah.
I want people to see this show. I have a show. I love my show. I need to be on stage. You know. And no matter what happens at the end of the day, as long as I'm on stage, I'm not gonna go nuts. Because that's I need to do that for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you don't ever see yourself. I mean, it sounds like it's going to grow huge from what you've told me about how you're now looking at other acts, other Dave & Buster's. You're moving into the States. It's going to go beyond Bobby Mata for sure.
Right, right.
It's going to have to. Right?
Right.
It can't grow otherwise.
Right.
But you still need to be up there. You're not going back behind a desk and a cell phone anytime soon.
No. Okay. No, that's not going to happen at all.
So,
that's my agreement.
So,
we hire people for that.
So magic is about sort of bending the reel, as a friend of ours would say, Jay, you know, is taking something and turning it into something else. It's about creating wonder. It's about mystery and so on. You've taken on this whole mentalist persona, I guess, in a way, without... what's the word? It's almost like you've demystified mentalism for me.
Mm-hmm.
Dare I say you've made it entertaining?
Well, I think, you know, it's evolution. That's what it is. I mean,
heard,
who said this? Ozzy Wynn said it best, and he said, you know, magic is not about creating something new, because that's rarely ever done. If you see, there's nothing really new out there. All it is, it's a reinvention done better. It's us evolving. It's that same effect done 30 times over with all these new things, and it's gotten better and bigger. And I think acts are the same thing. Like, you know, you look at the old school mentalist, I can actually read minds and bend spoons. And then out comes Darren Brown, because people are getting smarter and you can't insult people. And he says, it's okay, no, that's not how we do it. We use psychology and, right. And facial expressions. And then he made it entertaining. So where does it go from there? You know, and then you can start adding to it. And I was kind of fortunate that I was able to see all these things and say, I can brand myself like me, and I can use this, and I can take it to the next level and do whatever I want. But it's entertaining.
Yeah. So do you find, you don't claim, I mean, well, maybe you do. Do you claim to have some access that others don't? No, this is pure entertainment for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I do well is that I'm comfortable on stage.
Right. So do you feel, though, that, let's reduce it magic to a card trick for a moment. Is there something more relational about the kind of show that you do now? Is it more interpersonal? Is it because you're supposedly reading someone's mind or telling them something about themselves that there's no way you could ever know that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think if I could rewind for a sec, I think that, you know, being introduced to certain books, like Ken Weber's book on maximum entertainment, The 5 Points with Quantum Errors, that talk about entertainment as opposed to just tricks and making people, you know, or amazing them with a certain, you know, effect or something. They talk more about the entertainment side of things, like the arc, the emotional arc, the rule of three, stage presence, positionings, audience management. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what trick you do, because if your audience remembers your trick and not you, it's not a good show. That's not what, you know, they won't remember that anymore. Mm-hmm. It'll fade. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If they remember you and your presence and what you did on stage, that's a good show.
Yeah, you want them going out of the theater and going, wow, that was great.
That was great.
That trick was great.
Yeah.
Or wasn't it amazing how he did that?
The trick's amazing, but the experience is lost if they don't know who was there.
Right.
So I totally agree with you. I think that that's, you know, that's important, and that's something I was able to kind of like understand a little bit earlier.
Yeah, no, I've wondered some. I mean, I've certainly heard a lot of people, a lot of variety acts, a lot of comedians even, you know, sort of look down at magic or the craft of magic in a way, because it's just all about this effect, or it's about this moment. It's not about the experience.
Right.
Maybe that's what I'm talking about. And it seems to me that mentalists are trying to create more. It's not just about theatrics, but it's about
speaking about theatrics.
It's about ladies and gentlemen.
For the listeners out there, we have.
Too bad we're not on video right now.
And he's running.
That was Jeff Pinsky.
Jeff Pinsky, the owner of Browsers Den,
wearing a crazy hat.
Yeah, he was naked.
And I wonder if the desire of mentalists is to create more of an experience, that sense that, holy smokes, what just happened there? Because I think, and this is the frustration for me, I can still watch Beautiful Magic today, and whoever it is, I don't care who it is, and go, wow, it's awesome, and get a shiver. And in fact, I'm getting a little bit of one right now as I kind of remember those moments.
Yep.
But ultimately, sadly, we go to, how the heck did you do that?
Yeah, it becomes, you know, a puzzle.
It becomes a puzzle, and I don't know if we can ever get away with that. I hope we can get away from that. But I wonder if that the mentalist experience is a little more, I don't know, spiritual or...
Well, it's funny that you say that. You know,
working on another plane, you know?
This is the beautiful part about having the luxury of doing my shows. Because at the end of the shows, I take pictures with my audience. They come, they say goodbye to me, and I get feedback. And the feedback...
It's nice.
And you got to listen.
It's pretty good.
So the feedback is confirmation for me. And the feedback is, I oftentimes get, I know how you did that. I know how you did that last one. And I'd love to hear it. Tell me. And they always say, well, you were looking in his eyes, and I saw his eyes look to the left, and you were talking about neuro-linguistics programming and how the eyes move, and I'm like, busted, yeah, for sure. That tells me that the way I sold it was the way it was perceived. I did my job. Like, that was
it.
So I'm happy with that, and I'm grateful for that I actually reached the goal that I wanted to reach. Is I wanted to, you know, being in this in this field, being deceptive is what you want. The more deceptive you are, the better you sell your effect. You know, that's the goal right there. And when these guys give me that confirmation, or when they say, "Can you tell me how my grandmother's doing?" And I say, "Well, where is she?"
she's been dead for 7 years. You know, that's...
So you do get some of that?
All the time.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you deal with that as the entertainer? Do you...
It's the same question that I just got asked at the other podcast as well.
And oh, is that right?
Yeah, and it's funny because...
It's got to be a bit tough.
I don't know how to answer that. I always say, I don't do that, you know, and I'm strictly here as
an... And don't you have a disclaimer of some kind?
Right at the beginning of the show.
Hey, guys, I'm an entertainer, for heaven's sakes,
no,
by the way.
My thing is, I'm you know what I do? And most people say, oh, magic. And I'm like, no, I'm a mentalist. You know what mentalist does? So mentalist creates the illusion of mind reading. Mm. There it is. Mm. I just told you that I'm going to create the illusion. The rest of the show, take it for what you will.
Yeah.
You know, take it, process it, enjoy it. And I always tell them, I'm like, this is our bubble of mystery. Don't question it. Just go in the pond. Follow me.
Right. Right.
You know, and they love that because I look at them and they look at me and they're like, okay, take me
so
there.
So speaking to Lawrence Haas recently, who's written a book called Inspirations, philosopher, really thoughtful guy, really smart, a wonderful magic, great book, by the way, you got to read it. Reminds me of reading, going back to reading The Books of Wonder by Tommy
Wonder.
Really interesting stuff and just real beautifully written, etc. And a podcast coming up soon with him as well.
Oh, great.
And some insights about lots of other things too, not just about magic. But he really talks a lot about that experience in the other, right?
Right.
And I Lawrence is an entertainer, there's no question, but he's also, I think, trying to play with the person or the audience's perception. You just spoke about that a little bit. Is that kind of what you're doing too? Does that drive you to the stage? I mean, it's not just an ego thing. It's not just about, I got to be on stage because I love getting applause. Mm-hmm. This goes a little, or I want to make lots of money. This goes a little deeper than that, doesn't it?
100%. Yeah. For, you know, and it's not about ego for me. It started off as an ego thing because it really did feed into it.
Sure.
But for me, you know, every time I go on stage, I'm a little bit nervous. I want to make sure that everything is okay. I take note of the fact that the audience paid to see me. And nice. I always whisper to myself before I go on stage, love your audience, give them everything you got. And I always just think that this is the last show I'm ever going to do.
Right.
I go with that mindset. I heard it once before, and every time I go on stage, I remind myself, this is the last show you're going to do, so make sure it's the best one you got. And it's because I want them to really enjoy themselves. I get joy out of seeing an audience respond and have fun at the edge of their seats with a smile on their face, getting their money's worth.
And is it about creating that moment of escape for the audience, would you say? Like, kind of like, oh, I go to the movies because I want to escape from the real world. Or do you actually want them to question the real world?
No. I don't want them to question the real world. I mean, that's a whole different thing. That's a spiritual thing. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
That's for me, it's important in my life because perspective is everything, you know?
Sure.
And sometimes we need to take a look at what's happening around us and open our eyes and see if there's anything else. That's separate from that. But I would love for people to come into that showroom and for that little while that they're in there, everything else is quiet and gone. And now they're walking down Mystery Lane. So some of the things that, I mean, what does magic do to you? The first emotion that you get when you see something amazing is you're in shock. You don't have any expression. Your mouth opens up and you're questioning reality at that moment.
What follows after that?
Yeah,
the first thing I ever saw was this crazy bit that when I do a kid's show, which is pretty rare these days, I still do, and the reaction of myself when I was six, and I remember it, I can go back there.
You see it in their faces.
I see the exact same reaction.
Right, and so when...
The mouth is open.
Right.
And there's this, it's wonder, it's mystery, it's holy smokes.
What happens right after that? What follows that emotion?
Rarely a standing ovation.
But right after that moment of awe, where their mouths are dropped and they're in shock, laughter ensues.
Oh, yeah, no. And in this particular case, yeah.
It's natural because human beings, if some sort of a crazy event takes place, as long as no one's hurt or injured, everybody always laughs.
Yeah. Yeah,
you drop a glass and it's about to smash on the floor, and you grab it.
Yeah,
people giggle.
Yeah, yeah.
If you see someone run into a wall, turn around, rub his nose, and laugh, everybody laughs.
Well, there's something very human about that, right? There's something that we're all in the same playing field now, right? I interviewed this Buddhist Lama recently who studied under the Dalai Lama, 15 years in Tibet. Unbelievable, this guy, right? Mm. And his sense of humor
was... Did he talk at all?
Yeah, he did, actually, yeah. But he tells me, and I will tell this for the rest of my life, he tells me about the first Tibetan fart joke. Wow. You know, back in the 7th century, and it's written. It's in a poem. It's
really?
About, yeah. And I mean, I've got the reference at home, and I anyway, but for me, my response was, well, Glenn, doesn't that kind of just kind of level the playing field just a little bit and humanizes? And
do you know what just happened? Everyone just paused this and went to their computer and put this,
right.
the first Tibetan fart joke.
Yes, first Tibetan fart joke. I don't know if it would come up as that.
I want to Google
that.
That's
certainly what
I'm doing
it.
After this.
Yeah, I wish you well with that. So can you remember, we're going to have to wrap it up in a couple seconds, Bobby, which is crazy, but can you remember what the effect was? What was it? Tell me a little bit about that Las Vegas-like feeling on your anniversary. You're there, obviously, enjoying one another. This is it, man.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in. Like, I just drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And maybe it wasn't an effect, but...
Oh, and you know, I feel terrible for not remembering his name, but he created... You might remember his name. It's the guy that created the floating, glowing little ball. And he owns a magic shop in Vegas. Do you know what his name is?
I don't. Not off the
top. I wish I had it with me.
Was that the... he?
That was the one. So what happened is... Well, it wasn't actually that. It started off with a floating bill.
Floating bill, okay.
And I've never seen anything float like that in real life
right,
in front of my
right,
face before.
Right,
so I
right.
walked in the shop. He looked at me, and he put a cup in front of me, and he rolled up a little bill, put it on top of the cup. I thought he was going to drop it in the cup. When he
right.
let go, it stayed on top of the cup. And then it moved off the cup, around his hand, back into the cup, dropped into the cup, and he put it in my hand. And I remember looking back and screaming for Alana. Alana, come here! And I remember, I have this vivid memory of what I felt in my body.
Yeah, yeah.
And how it just, you know, I looked at that and I thought I was seeing, I thought I saw a spaceship. Now, imagine if there was no fear, if you knew we had visitors coming from a different planet that were going to come and bring love. Right, and you saw them pull up in that UFO that was shaped like a heart, and they were good people or aliens.
Yep.
That same feeling you would get seeing that is the same feeling you get seeing something float in the air in front of you. It's that same feeling of like, this is happening right now to me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Oh wow, what the hell is going on? And I had that feeling, and then he goes, if you like that one, watch this. And he brought the ball out, he made it glow, and then he started floating it all around his body. I just about passed out, you know, and I think, wow, this is amazing.
You were ready for that.
In some
way, you were ready for that experience.
Perfect timing.
For whatever reason, right?
It brought it to me. Whatever it was, it brought it to me, and it brought it to me the right time. And
yeah.
And yeah. Wow, did it ever hit me hard. My God. And everything else after that was just like, more lethal tender, you know that trick.
There was a desire for access.
Yeah,
you just kind of insatiable desire to learn more.
I miss that, by the way.
Right,
I don't see that very often nowadays. When we have a good lecturer that comes in and does something and fools us with it, rarely do I see that. But when I do, it's such a good feeling.
Yeah, it's cool.
It really is.
That's awesome. Well, listen, why don't we talk about doing part two? It's getting awfully noisy out there in that store. This magic
sure.
store is very busy here today. All that chit-chat in the background, by the way, folks, is a group of crazy magicians out front probably working on some new card trick. That'd be my guess.
Yeah,
can you tell me just wrap it up with Trick Theater?
Trick Theater is the company that hosts all the magic shows throughout Dave & Buster's in the States. So we have Ohio, we have Pittsburgh, we have... North Carolina, we have Baltimore, Philadelphia, and it's going all that we're just expanding more and more. Every month we're adding a new shop in, and we're looking for ultimately the best, you know, the best guys in that one state, and to give them a residency, a 11-month contract for a residency to do 4 shows a weekend. So we're looking for that all the time. And just I'll wrap it up with my vision for this.
Yeah,
so my
please.
Vision
yeah.
for Trick Theater is to use Dave & Buster's as a hub, because there's so many of them, as a hub to not only bring great magic to the public, but to also give those guys that do great magic a shot at doing it. Because right now there's too many guys in our industry that are amazing at SEO, and you search Magician Pittsburgh and you get Joe Blow that doesn't know how to do a show but is great with SEO that pops up, and he does not deserve to be on stage before... this guy who's
well you're
the
providing
experience.
People an opportunity, which I think is so cool, because there's so few places where you can get a stage.
Right,
I mean, it's crazy, but it's a little, there's a little vaudeville here. in trick theater, it sounds to me. Like,
but that's my vision. So, I mean, at the end of the tunnel, my vision is that people know this place called Dave & Buster's is not only the place that has a lot of video games and stuff, but did you know that this place has some of the best entertainers in the world?
Yeah.
Let's go watch a show tonight. Yeah. It becomes like a Yuck Yucks. Like,
and is it going to be just about magic? Magic mentalism?
It's going to be magic mentalism. It's going to be hypnosis. It's going to be under our umbrella of magic. A variety of things. Nothing outside of what we do, though.
Right. You also create. So your site, if people want to get to know more about you, is Bobby Motta. That's MOTTA.com.
BobbyMotta.com. That's me if you want to book me personally or come see the show at Dave & Buster's. It's in Vaughan.
But you also create.
Still have a product line.
You are still selling things.
For sure. Yeah, the product line is there, and it's called ModaMagic.com. So
cool.
If you guys are all any
and
performers.
when do you sleep?
Very rarely.
Yeah, that's my guess. Yeah.
Well, then I got a 10-month-old at home too. That doesn't help.
So. That's not going to help.
Listen, this is a blast. This was fun.
Thanks for joining me today, Bobby. So check them out online, BobbyMotta.com. That's MOTTA.com. Or you know, if you're thinking about getting into it and you're looking for that floating ball of light, ModaMagic.com, or at least that similar experience, check that out.
And for the heavy hitters in you.
We'll do part two again.
Absolutely.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.